Welcome to Biggest Geekus. We are your hosts. I am Joe.
And I'm Patrick.
All right. This is episode 190 of our show. The date is Tuesday, May 14th, 2024. All right. How are you doing today,
Mr. Great. Patrick? I'm doing great.
Good deal. Good deal. Me too. I got to work early today, so that's always nice.
Me too.
That's cool. All right. Looks like we got a few folks in here. The Dungeon Minister, thanks for stopping by. Martinson, Darth Theic, Ultra American.
TTRPGer.
Oh, yeah. Well, didn't get into any gaming this past week, did you?
Yeah, I have my usual Friday night game with Greg Trombley and crew.
Okay, cool. Hey, Flady, how's it going? Welcome by. Hopefully, I had food on my shirt. Hopefully, you guys didn't see it. Send the YouTuber police after me. So, how does your game go?
I didn't die.
Well, that's always good. That's always good.
I almost can't remember what we did. I do remember fighting a dragon. I do remember lots of magic missling. What did we? Oh no, we fought a ton of undead. We're in the middle of it's a Pathfinder adventure path, but it's done with the fifth edition rules. It's the Curse of the Crimson Throne.
Mm.
It's like the second adventure path that they've ever done.
Right. Hey, Iron Man. He asked, will you continue playing your Horde Wars game stream? I'm assuming. Due to various things, we're not playing that until... That's not until end of the month. I think the last Friday of the month. So you're in your adventure path?
Yes. We're at the tail end of it now. Chapter 5 of 6. And after this one's finished, I guess he's starting up, Greg's starting up Fallout.
Cool. That's only got one. That only has one version of rules, right?
For yeah.
The tabletop.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
It'll be interesting. I haven't played a strictly sci-fi-ish game in quite a while.
I can really get into sci-fi. I like it a lot.
Got to step outside my comfort zone. I can't wear a pointy hat.
Oh, you can if you spells. Want.
Well, I mean, I can if I want, if I just want to be crazy. But no spells, no magic.
Yeah.
Closest thing I can do is be some crazy wastelander who wears a pointy hat and then fires off a rocket and screams fireball.
sure, you could do that. I don't know about Fallout, but some sci-fi games have have psionic powers in it. So I don't know about Fallout. So you could maybe, if Fallout does, maybe you could still be somewhat wizard-like. So Ultra American has a Horde Wars game. He's saying that they had played a continuation of his. He has his elf gray wizard, Scald, incurred the fury, I read that as furry the first time I saw the word, of 86 terracotta halfling warriors.
That's a standing army.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, in Horde Wars, that's something that can happen, is lots and lots of enemies downrange.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Legion.
Hello, Legion.
Well, I didn't have any games this week, so I was able to... even though it was kind of last minute for me, get a topic thrown together for tonight. But after I got the topic, I found some other things to talk about first. Wipe the floor with them. Good deal. Ultra America said they wiped the floor with them. How do you wipe the floor with them barely? That seems a little incongruous.
Well, any victory is a good victory.
It's a good victory. It's a good victory. So I must have been in a hole, according to some, because I missed somehow, some way, that D&D Beyond got nerfed. Now, it might be, It might be that maybe I was sick for a few weeks, or it might be that I don't use D&D Beyond.
Well, I mean, I don't either, but they're really, really pushing the envelope for, you know, oh, we want to completely monetize D&D like we do video games. It's just a program being run by people who don't understand the hobby.
Right. So for the longest now, right. I clicked on D&D Beyond when they first started out years ago and then was not very impressed. So I haven't been back.
I don't enjoy giving money to people that hate me.
Right. But apparently they were allowing people to buy little pieces of content from their books. Usually $2.
It's a good model,
I guess, if you don't want to sell books.
And some people are glued to virtual tabletops. I don't understand why.
Right.
Because we game in person or we don't game at all.
Right, right. So they decided, because for some reason, to stop their a la carte program where they would allow people to buy a class or a monster or whatever. It's kind of silly to me. But anyway, yeah, they stopped doing that. And then people started crying. Yes, David, they were doing microtransactions for their game books. Right?
Oh, you only like this specific subclass out of this one book? Yeah, sure, buy it for a couple of bucks.
Now, to give them some
part of your repertoire.
To give them some credit, whatever you bought out of that book, if you went and decided to buy that book electronically, you would get discounted what you bought into it already, from what I understand, which is fine, I suppose.
Yeah. And you know what? If you have to run an electronic tabletop like that, that's fine. I have no beef with that. The beef I have is when you say, I don't care if you're buying little bits of my book and the rest of my book is crap. You will buy the whole piece of crap.
Right. So I think it's only a real problem for the folks who use D&D Beyond. So if you do, and this has impacted you, writing was on the wall. The fellow who instigated the SRD. What was this? What's the controversy from last year where they were going to? It's not the SRD.
Open game.
OGL. Yeah. So they had the OGL controversy, and the guy who kicked that off in his bullet points said that they needed to completely scuttle D&D Beyond. And so, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that this was happening. Now, some people are saying they're all in it for the money, and that's the whole reason. And it may be that they are wanting their books to sell in whole instead of in part. And I'm going to say, well, one, I think that their books are overpriced. That's one of their problems. And a lot of books are overpriced these days. It's not just Wizards of the Coast. They rely way too heavily on art. Now, if your book is thick with two C's at the end,
yes,
book is thick, and it's filled with game content, I am fully prepared to lay down $50 for that. But if it's mostly art and a tiny bit of really crappy game content, then $50. I mean, if it's supposed to be a coffee table book, fine.
And if you're like me, you prefer your ladies thick with 1C.
Yeah. So I think that the industry has, in a lot of ways, the bigger studios, they make books that should be coffee table books because of all the art in them.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with art. But if it's going to jack the price up so much, I just want the game content. So much. Yeah, just tone it down. Them using the a la carte system in the first place is probably led to this, because on some level, the bean counters are probably right in that if they insisted on their books being sold as a whole and not a la carte, they might be, you know, more in the black instead of in the red.
I think this is also going on the idea that Ms. Cynthia Williams, that has 5 C's after thick.
Hmm.
she wanted everybody to pay to play, be it GM or player.
Right, right.
Which is ridiculous. It really is.
But there is already a solution for the folks who are cheap. That they didn't. I don't know if they adopted it for 5th edition. You could correct me. It was the SRD. Now, I don't know if there is. Is there? Uh-oh, Ultra American says 5 C's. I don't know if...
She's a big woman.
Does 5th edition have an SRD? And it may not include all of the extraneous books.
5E does have an SRD.
Oh, okay.
I sometimes use it when leveling up my wizard at Greg's game.
Does it include all the latest classes and races?
Most of them.
Okay, so then people shouldn't be whining about this stuff. I mean, some, if the content isn't included yet in the SRD, but as long as there's an SRD, then you've got free D&D content.
I just think that there's never going to be an end to wanting more money from your wanting more money out of your customer base or your audience.
Right, right.
It's like, so, oh, if you're paying this much, you should be able to pay this much. Oh, how about a little more? Can I have a little more? Money, please.
Right, right. So, and that's, I have 4 points here. Overpriced, a la carte, SRD is a good thing. And lastly, if the books were good, if the game was good, people would be buying their books. Right? If it was good enough, it would be selling enough. And they wouldn't have to worry about the few cheapos out there who want to either pirate their book or use the SRD. I mean, that's what the SRD is for. That and sharing, making, expanding their product base.
As much as Paizo has upset me over the past few years, they practically print money.
Right, right. So... I really don't.
They make money off of making modules, which a couple decades ago was unheard of.
Right. And their modules have always had lots of content in them. They have the obligatory maps and stuff like that, but they're not overburdened with art. Although a lot of it's kind of embedded in the page. So it's kind of watermarked art that's behind the text, a lot of it. So you can work art in there and probably still be fine, because that's a lot less intensive on your printing, because you don't use as much ink to print out that kind of a page as you would, you know, full color page.
It's look at Palladium art. Books.
Right. Well, they're black and white on the interior.
And
right?
those guys, they don't have 9-to-5 jobs. Palladium is their income.
Right.
And that's almost unheard of. But they still turn a profit.
Sure, sure. Because their books, now, they could use better organization. I think we all know that. But the interiors are mostly black and white. The newer ones have art inserts, but they're not really part of the rules pages. That all of the art, inline art, is black and white art, and they have a full color cover. And I think that keeps their books lower priced, and all the rest of the interior of their books are
rules. I've seen that a couple of the like collector's editions of the books, in the middle of the book, they'll have like the glossy pages, but it'll be like full color art.
Yeah, yeah. But the vast majority of it is all black and white line art. And it's still evocative. And the Iron Man says, I really appreciate artwork that illustrates the monsters in a rule set. You can do that with black and white line art. It's that doesn't jack up the price of your book.
I plan on making mine look like an old school bestiary.
Oh, okay. That's cool. You know, I thought it would be a cool way to do a book would be in Supernatural, the two boys' father had a book that told them all about the monsters, right? So yeah, you could write a book like that, but it would probably be super expensive.
Yeah, because that would rely on a ton of art assets.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as much as I do love to draw, I couldn't do that.
Right, because there would be probably art on almost every page.
Well, everybody, now that I've put out the role-playing game for you, the Age of Mages Bestiary, I've been working on it for a couple of years. It'll be out in about 5.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. So, they nerfed D&D Beyond, but, you know, most of folks in our neck of the woods, it's not going to affect us.
No, it's not going to affect anybody who does things the natural way.
Yeah. Organic.
Organic.
Mm. Talk about a term of art. All right, the other controversial issue that I ran into that Pat brought to my attention. Actually, I ran into it and then I kind of forgot about it. And then Pat, we talked about it right before. Is this the Red Box Warrior?
Oh yeah, that Red Box Warrior fighting that ancient red dragon. Let's see if I bet you all didn't know that is a sexy bitch.
Right.
That is that. That's not a man. That's a ma'am.
Okay, so I've got to do this. Do that. StreamYard has weird rules about how it does screen sharing. Let's see. There we go. Share. So, that dude.
Yes.
So, we got the red dragon, and you got the dude. And it's a dude, right? Larry Elmore said it was a dude.
Yes. You can even see there his name right across the front. Elmore.
Right.
And Larry Elmore's like, no, that was a dude. I'm kind of known for painting my ladies.
Right. Definitely a dude.
If that were a woman, Larry Elmore would have had that more side facing so that you could get like side boob or something, because he made it very, very obvious that that the females in his art were female. But no, apparently that's an obese woman.
Right, so yeah, the Wizards of the Coast is now saying it's a woman. WizKids is releasing a figure in association with WizKids, and it's a woman. And it doesn't really match this very precisely, because the figure is kind of thick, kind of, well, in their words, she's
buff. What's
the word I use? Buff. So, buff. But more buff than the dude here.
No,
so,
that's thick with three C's.
Yeah. But yeah, Elmore went on Twitter and said, yeah, it was supposed to, it's a guy.
And what's worse is if they wanted an iconic female figure, but going to the original piece of art, you pull back on that, and there's also a halfling thief that's stuffing a bag full of gold, and there's a female sorceress blasting that dragon with magic missiles.
Right, so Darthik is also bringing up that, well, instead of changing him to hers, they skipped over all of the other bad women and PCs. What the hell? Yeah, what the hell?
There are plenty out there.
How much, he brings up the woman holding the nose ring of an ogre, right? The female warrior who did that.
Yep.
And all of the Dragonlance iconic art. And there are a few women
one specifically from the basic set. Morgan Ironwolf.
Right. So it's really silly that instead of just grabbing an iconic already a female for sure, they had to take something that was already established and everybody knew was a guy and had a figure, like you said, from back in the day, a figure of this dude that was a dude and change it. But all these companies that are reporting it are gaslighting, including WizKids, apparently, because they're jerks too, in trying to tell all of us who are like, no, that's supposed to be a guy. They're telling us we're regressive and clinging on to the old stuff. And if
we complain about it, we're weirdos.
Right. So, yeah.
No, all that tells me is we should have gatekept the hobby better.
Yeah. Well, you can't keep people from playing the game.
Yeah, true.
But
they think they can.
People who are in our camp still go and buy their stuff. So what can you do? Anyway, that's silly stuff over there in the industry.
Support people who don't hate you.
Right. And, you know, you can always play the old stuff without buying their stuff. And if you don't want to buy their stuff, you can use the SRT. That doesn't give them any money at all.
Although if you don't already have the old books, you may have to be a little more creative about finding the old books if you don't already have them.
If you're not super concerned about, as long as you can read every page and the book's not completely falling apart, you can get older versions of the game. You can get first edition books for I don't want to say inexpensively, but they're not, if you don't want a first printing and maybe there's some spine damage or something like that, you can probably get it for okay prices.
I think you may be able to get it through DriveThruRPG as well. But I don't know if those are the ones that come with like the warning labels on them. Warning, this game was invented by a racist. Homophobe Nazi jerk. But we'll still play his game though.
Right. Lady says, buy small independent or old tried and true and play your back stock. Same with comics, movies, books, everything. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Enjoy what you got. And then hope that when the IP moves to somebody else, maybe they'll take better care of it.
Yeah. People like us, David Will says, people like us need to make more content and media. And in that vein.
Yes, David, thank you for the additional kick in the ass.
Yeah, segue. So our main topic is the magic user. Mended. Fixed. I was trying to think of something clever, and of course I couldn't. But everyone who's watched this channel or knows me knows I'm not a fan of Sidovansian magic and the old school wizard, even though I played AD&D first edition, second edition, third edition, and I almost exclusively played wizards. And hold on a second. Pat David Gwill asked, Patrick, who cares where the IP goes? Create your own stuff.
And I agree with that, yeah. Which is why I'm trying to do just that.
Right. So, yes, and I think David is also not a fan of Sidovansian magic. Even though we've called it Vansian for years, it's not. All you have to do is read one Jack Vance book, and you're like, oh, this isn't that. This isn't that. It's not the same thing.
This is magic inspired by Jack Vance.
And then the people inspired smoked a lot of weed, because while there are some, you can see where maybe it took some inspiration, limited amount of spells, because in the Vance books, you know, one I read, the most powerful wizard there had 5 spells that they could keep in their mind, but none of them were magic missile where you plink somebody to death. They were all usually powerful or did many things, or you could keep going for a long time. So they were not really the same thing.
Well, Bruce, would it please you to know that I am doing that very thing?
Yes. Last episode we talked, was it last episode? We, you discussed it a little bit or just said
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And we should, as much as you want to share, we should talk about it on here.
Yeah, because I have done a few of these things that you have suggested in mending the mage.
Right. So you don't necessarily need another game or another book. If you have the player's handbook and you're a DM who wants to breathe a little life into the magic user, especially at low levels, there's some ways to do it without really changing a whole lot of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You leave them the slots that are in the book. Everything else about the wizard stays the same, except according to the first edition magic user description, you have to wait until 11th level to get to make potions or scribe scrolls.
That is so ridiculous. Right. Level 11 for potions?
Right.
Really?
Well, they lump all magic items together, right, into one thing. So yeah. Scrolls and magic items you get at 11th level.
Although at least third edition D&D had it where, right from the get-go, wizards can scribe scrolls.
Right.
Third level for potions, and then rings and rods and all that stuff is the upper tiers.
Level. Yeah, yeah. So my recommendation was scribe scrolls at level 1. Don't make them wait till 11th level. Heck, most games don't make it to 11th level. So this is basically to help that wizard who's only got one spell, and you get your one spell cast and you're done for the day until you sleep.
Playing Pathfinder, that's the way I had plenty of spells to go around. Is I looked at Scribe Scroll as many spell slots as I want if I have the gold to scribe them.
Right. So money and time is all you need. So when you first pop out of the character generation thing and you go on your first adventure, you should be able to pay for a few scrolls. All you need is time at that point and materials. David Will says, I wouldn't even have a level requirement. Make whatever. Just have the materials and facilities. Right. That's why we're saying first level. Let them just do whatever. Well, potions and scrolls. Other magic items, sure.
I would think that there needs to be a higher level of magical understanding to create, you know, the intricate staves.
Right.
And forge rings. That sounds to me like something that you would need to have. You'd need to have a few levels under your belt before you can get right into the really big stuff. But single use items, yeah, do that right out of the gate.
Yeah. Right. Well, right. We're talking about, Ultra American says, how about making it classless? Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about fixing the magic user so that you don't have to make a whole lot of changes. This isn't a big change. This is just moving from 11th level to first level. The only other thing you need to do, because the DMG in first edition really didn't give a whole lot of guidelines on making stuff, you would need to decide that. Right. David Gould says magic staff should be a tool that makes your spells better, something all wizards should have. Correct. I get that. That's not what staves do in D&D. But, and I didn't think about that, we can have an addendum to this where we stat up just the generic, this makes my spells better, walking stick.
Staves for wizards in my game is going to have an entire section on it, because that's one of the ways that you'll be able to customize your wizards, is how you create your magical staff and the stuff you do to advance it and make it more powerful.
Cool. Right. So let wizards make their scrolls as soon as they have money and time. My recommendation for scrolls is 100 gold pieces per spell level, and it takes you one day to make a scroll. Right. I think that's, I know in some other versions of the game, it might be less, like first level scroll might be 50 gold pieces. There might be 50 gold pieces first. That's the duration. I can't remember what third edition was, but I think just a flat 100 gold pieces per spell level that you're trying to make, that you are able to make.
I'm not sure what the third edition formula was. With that being said, do you think that the spells should be of the level of the creator of the scroll, or just its base level for casting?
Probably base level. You make the scroll at base. So if you make it any more complicated, you're going to have to increase the cost of the scroll and the time required, I would think.
Well, that's what like third edition and Pathfinder did.
Right.
Was they had like the formula of spell level times, you know, character level, or however powerful you wanted to make the scroll up to your level.
Right.
David Gwill is preceding us.
Right. So, well, kind of. So we've got something on making spells better, but it's not necessary for scrolls. It's a different topic. But so as a base rule, you have your scroll at caster level, and that's it. So we could have an addendum to this later on. And, you know, how long it takes, how much it costs, you could have a baseline, but it's also going to depend on the economy of scale at your table. So let's say you guys at your table have ditched the gold piece standard and are doing a silver or copper, whatever. You may have to alter or make up your own rules for how much things cost as far as making them. You might even ditch the gold piece cost and have your casters, your adventurers, just go find the components. And that might even be more interesting than just giving it a gold piece cost.
I tell you from personal experience, it is way more interesting to have that kind of economy rather than just throwing gold at it.
Right. The gold is easy, but the component search is more interesting. Yes,
I think as game design went on for just about every role playing game out there, everybody wants, we want it quicker, we want it quicker, we want it quicker, mm-hmm. We want everything super easy. We want snap, 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 right now, 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 now. So they Oh my god, I'm forgetting words today. Where you make something generalized, abstracted. They abstract it. And the gold pieces just become just, it's like, oh, to make this potion, you need these special berries that grow up on this mountain, and you need essence of aqueous, or, you know, whatever these components are. Instead of keeping track of what those components are or having to go get them, it's just like, forget all that. I'll just spend a 100 gold pieces at a magic shop, and that'll be all of my components. And I think it takes a little bit away from games, but of course this is all a your mileage may vary type thing. Some people don't want to keep track of all that stuff. Some people are fascinated by it.
Sure.
I happen to be the latter.
Right. Now, what it would also be cool is to come up with a list that we can build over time of various components that you could use as a substitute for a flat raw gold piece expenditure, right? And maybe some of these components can be used for a variety. It could be a common component that most scrolls use. A special kind of ink, maybe giant squid ink. You need to go, you know, whack a few giant squids, and hopefully they actually have a lot of ink in their ink sacks. I'm not sure how much it would be, but and how much it would require, but it all depends on how you want to set that.
Oof, David just brought up something I hated from third edition, and that was XP burned when creating magic items. Not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Burning XP. Yeah.
I believe in AD&D, it was the other way around. You gained XP from creating items.
Right. Yeah, there was alternative ways to get XP, and making items was one of them. Right. That sounds familiar. But like I said, all the specifics on time, money, and components, that's going to vary a lot for taste. So some will want to just say, hey, I've got the gold, let me just go make it. And then some will want to use it as a springboard for adventure, or just more likely, hey, while you're going to your adventure location, you're going to be going by this forest. It's probably going to be chock full of stuff you could use for making potions and scrolls. So you can take a detour in there and a few sacks, and then you'll have a large amount of the components you would use for those things.
Yeah, there's a role-playing game called The Dark Eye that all their magic item stuff, they have like, oh, we're going to create this potion of healing. Here are some common ingredients used in said potion of healing. And it listed off a whole bunch of them. You know, that's kind of a cool idea, too.
Right. All right, so we talked about scrolls. We got potions as well. We kind of mentioned that. It's kind of the same deal. The difference between potions and scrolls is that scrolls still need, you need to be a caster to use. Even in AD&D, you needed to be, except for in third edition, scrolls simply became just a spell. In previous editions, there were protection scrolls that anybody could use. That would be cool to bring back into your game or continue to use if you're still playing AD&D. Anybody could use those. But potions were usually... anybody could use any potion, unless it was, I think that there were a couple, maybe that only fighters, maybe the potion of heroism. I don't know if wizards could use that, because what use are they going to get out of it? They make you a better fighter. So
I don't know if the Potion of Heroism had you gain temporary levels in like third edition and up or not.
Say that again.
Potion of Heroism in like third edition and above. I thought that they gave you like temporary levels.
Something like that.
So it would be of use to a wizard, but I think you're right. I think AD&D Potions of Heroism really were only a fighter thing.
Right. So I can't really remember what third edition did with Potion of Heroism. But the difference being the scrolls were restricted to the caster. The potions in general were not. So on some level, they were a little bit more useful. So you could translate that into them perhaps costing a little bit more and having higher requirements on the brewing of or the making of. So I put down as a recommendation to 200 gold pieces per spell level and then done. But then again, same rule applies that we were just talking about with the scrolls. You can, as a DM, jettison all of that, make up your own cost and or components as a replacement for gold. That might have been the third edition one, right?
Yeah, that might. That sounds right.
Yeah. So, I think allowing the wizards to create these potions of scrolls at lower level will help them out.
Especially since, like I did for many times in Pathfinder, those were just extra spell slots for me. So if you have that problem with your first level wizard, I have one sleep spell memorized. I cast it, then run.
Right.
Unless you're playing AD&D, then you can walk up and coup de grace everything that's sleeping. But one single spell slot and you're useless.
Right.
And you don't really come into your own until like probably about fifth level and beyond.
Right.
You're horribly lagging behind, and the only way to offset that is if you have a bunch of single use scrolls in the form of, well, those are your extra spell slots.
Seventeenth level, generally speaking.
That's when the ninth level spells pop up.
Yep. So where the DM comes in to perhaps rein this in so it doesn't get too crazy and you have 50 scrolls and 50 potions and you never run out of anything is
the then cost. We go to go to encumbrance rules at that point. What does it look like if you have 50 spell scrolls on you?
Right. You have nothing else in your backpack.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't make it like prohibitive like Horde Wars tends to do, because with those encumbrance for those scrolls, I can only imagine that they're like those big Jewish scrolls of rolling out the Torah just to cast a single spell.
50 standard items. Yep, that's what they would be. So you got, as a DM, what you do is you limit as much as you normally do, how much gold goes through your adventurers, and how much time they're going to have on their hands to make these things. Some DMs, you don't have any time, so maybe this rule isn't going to, these adjustments won't work for you at your table, because if your adventurers are always hopping from situation to situation, they have almost no downtime, then this kind of stuff won't end up mattering.
One thing to remember, with potions, everybody thinks of potions and they think of like these big beakers that you unstop her and, you know, quaff the whole thing. You know, realistically, potions would probably be
fingernail polish.
No bigger than this little thing of popcorn salt.
I was even thinking they would probably be like the bottles of fingernail polish that the ladies have.
Oh, yeah, even smaller than that.
Yeah, like in Lord of the Rings movie, the vial of essentially holy water that
the
Frodo got.
The Star of... I'm ashamed.
I can't remember it either. So, right, that he drove that... Well, actually, Frodo didn't, but... Samwise drove off Shelob with...
The Vial of Galathrim?
Something like that. So it wasn't that big.
No, not at all.
And Samwise was a halfling, so in his hands it was, you know, like this big. So in our hands it would be like a bottle of fingernail polish.
Well, I was thinking, if you are going to have those big potion flasks, it's like, oh, this is all a healing potion, but it's about 10 doses of healing potion.
Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you, wife.
Oh, yeah. The Light of
Elendil.
Yay!
Thank you, wife.
A potion in a juice box. Oh, that's not too bad either. But yeah, if a normal potion is in that size flask, you can't drink the potion because you just ate and you are full.
I had that problem before.
Yeah, being full. Someone give you something nice, you're still going to be able to eat it or drink it, probably.
David Will says, got to be able to grab and chug it in 6 seconds. Well, I have watched Jeff polish off an entire bottled water in 6 seconds without coming up for air. Friday. He walks into our cabin, grabs a bottle of water, and in 6 seconds emptied that entire thing. And he just tossed it in the He said, "Wow, that was impressive." He says, "I was thirsty."
Yeah. So imagine this size bottle is in your pack, and you have to dig it out, and then you have to crack the seal on it, and then drink it without, you know, someone sticking their sword in your noggin, which is probably what would happen. All right. So as a little addendum, so this is maybe extra. It's not just stuff that you're getting a little early for your wizard, but alchemy is a real iconic thing for wizards to have and do. So
you cannot imagine a wizard's lab without the bubbling beakers and the alembics and the retorts and all the curly glassware.
Right. So throwing a little bone to the wizards or the magic users, an ability for them to gather materials and be able to make things on the fly that would be helpful for your crew, your adventuring party. So you can have a stabilizer brew that stops the bleeding. You can have an antitoxin that neutralizes poisons. It doesn't have to neutralize all of them, right? Or magical ones. So you can always have different, you can have a scaling amount of, a scaling version of that, where this level of substance will neutralize these poisons. Maybe you may have one that does the magical ones or something that does all of them. You can also have a cure disease cleansing. It's a cleanser. So maybe you drink it and then you get rid of the disease, but maybe you have to stay in the outhouse for a while because it's a cleanse.
If your campaign world doesn't have much in the way of clerical magic, that's also kind of a way to shove some of the healing into a wizard's hands, especially if their spell lists still don't have healing.
Right.
You could make that through alchemy and stuff like that.
Right, right. So they're essentially herbalists with a little oomph. All right, so I don't think that changes wizards on a fundamental level. I think it makes them more akin to their iconic selves. What do you think?
Makes them much more viable and far less weenie at lower levels.
Right. Because you're still not going to have all that much money, and you're not going to necessarily have all that much other wherewithal to make these things. You're going to have some.
You know, David, I love you, man, but you're starting to sound like a sideshow barker.
Well, he's got a, he wants to.
We have alchemical potions that can cure many different diseases and poisons.
Oh,
come
yeah,
on,
yeah.
Come
yeah.
on, get Dungeons and Delvers today.
Right, right. That's cool.
And I will say to anybody listening, get Dungeons and Delvers.
Yes, it's a good
book. Very, very good.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to tell you guys to do the thing. Subscribe, like, share. Do all the things that help the algorithm put us out as recommendations. All right. Our second topic, and it's going to probably go by pretty fast unless you had anything you wanted to add to it, are something you can kind of add to the wizard part that we just did, called power spell components. And I know that we talked about it in a previous episode, and someone had said, well, what? Why don't you give us some examples? So I came up with 9. One for each spell level, 1 through 9. I did not include cantrips, because for AD&D, that was only a thing in Unearthed Arcana.
Cantrip was actually a spell.
Yeah.
It was the name of a spell, not a right. classification of spells.
Right.
Yeah, cantrip says, oh, this spell does everything listed here.
Right. So, came up with 9. The first one is amber. And that's essentially that little yellow jewel that has a bug in it, right?
Yes.
Right?
Extract the DNA from the mosquito and you can make dinosaurs.
Right. That's what they say. So you have an amber.
It's true.
And it increases. Use it to increase your light spell's duration to 1 hour per level. Because normally it's 10 minutes. Makes it a lot more useful. Carrion crawler venom. Use it to double the base strength reduction of the ray of enfeeblement. Normally it's 25% plus 2% per level, per caster level. This increases it to 50%. So zap your favorite warrior and watch him not
watch
be able to carry
him crawl on his belly.
Right, right. Fire opal increases fireball damage to a D10 per level from a D6.
That's actually more generous than I would have done.
Could do D8. A lot of people probably would just say, just add a point per spell level. But to me, that's kind of weenie. That's weenie.
No, I would at least do a D8 per level. Bump that die up.
Yeah, bump up the die. Face spider blood. Now, this might be the other direction. I thought it was, in my head, it was better than once I wrote it down and looked it up. But Phase Spider Blood eliminates the recovery time for Dimension Door. So in AD&D, when you cast Dimension Door, you have to rest for 7 segments. Okay? In the parlance of AD&D, that could mean you rest going into the next round. Because Dimension Door is a 4th level spell. It takes 4 segments to cast, and you might have to start that on whatever segment you're on, right, in the combat. You might not, it might add up to spill over to the next round, which could be bad for you Well, Phase Spider Blood eliminates that. You just cast it and you're good.
Oh, I like the way Bruce thinks. Fire Opal ups it up to D8 level with exploding die damage. Very thematic, that.
Yeah, that's a cool alternative, too. Now, good luck on finding this in this monster. The Mimic Stomach. Considering it can change into all kinds of different things. But good luck finding it. Provides a space in the spell Magic Jar. You have to have a gem to put your soul in. It puts a space in there for your body to go into. So you don't have to find somebody to protect it, necessarily. A Beholder Eye Stalk imposes a -3 to Disintegrate's saving throw.
Extra points if you use it as like a flaccid magic wand.
Oh. Yeah. Minotaur's Horn doubles the time spent in a maze spell.
Bruce, when mimics die, what form do they revert to? If you watch the anime Delicious in Dungeon, they are a crustacean. They look like lobsters.
That is interesting. I don't know if any article on the mimic has ever really said that I've read. A red dragon heart. So in my head when I was thinking this, dragons are gigantic, especially the older ones. They probably don't just have one heart. They probably have multiple, or at least different things in their circulatory system, if they have one. They're not just all magic on the inside, that perform the same function in different parts of their body. So they have giant necks, so maybe on the smaller ones are on individual vessels in their neck, right? So they have these two little independently pumping dealy bobs inside their neck. You get one of those, because otherwise, when you say a red dragon heart, you're probably imagining, you know, a beach ball size thing or bigger. But no, it's small. It's small enough for you to carry. Changes the duration of Mordenkainen's Magnificent Mansion to 1 day per level. Which is significant, because the normal duration is 1 hour per level. And I was really trying to think of something else I could make cool in that, to change Mordenkainen's Magnificent Mansion, but it's already pretty dang cool, as described.
Oh.
Did your little one give you a present?
Speaking of Mordenkainen, my cat just crop dusted me. Kitty. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Mordenkainen just cast Disjunction. Woo!
And, finally, Pit Fiend Ichor. And, you know, I found out it's actually pronounced Ichor. For the longest, I thought it was Ichor. But
Ichor.
It's Ichor. When you go to the dictionary online, it has a little thing that tells you, you know, it gives you an audible on it, and
just Ichor. like chitin is chitin.
Yeah. So some audible books, everybody was pronouncing it like Ichor. I said, you're all wrong. It's Ichor. No, I'm wrong. Pit Fiend Ichor doubles damage and imposes a -5 save penalty for Prismatic Sphere. So
again, Bruce, I like the way you think.
Bruce says, I'm totally digging Patrick taking over for Randy. Randy should be exiled until he ponies up all the treasure out of Encyclopedia Magica Volume 4 he owes his party. Shame! Awesome. So, yeah. That's the kind of thing I would come up. I'm not saying that these are definites in a game I'm going to run. But these are the kind of ideas I think would be cool for someone to use for power components for spells. And I think I'll put these up on our show notes so you can copy them if you like.
And as you said in like a previous show, monster parts and all that also make good components for crafting, like, the permanent magical items.
Right.
Like a Bahir's heartstrings would make a great core for a wand of lightning.
Sure. All right. Did you have anything you wanted to add to any of that besides what you just said? No?
I think we've gone through most of it.
Right. So, folks, you're going to find that we're probably going to make these episodes a bit shorter.
Yes, buddy. I love you, but you're stinky.
Because, you know, 2 hours is probably more than anybody would ever want to spend looking at our noggins here on YouTube. So
that is very true.
So
I am not a pretty man by any stretch of the imagination.
All right. So with all that said, all of this is going to be posted in the show notes for this show, so you can use and edit as you feel fit. Also, our normal links will be in the show notes. And if that is all, let me get my button ready. All right. If that's all, if there's nothing more from Patrick, nothing more from me, this is Joe.
This is Patrick.
And remember, if you can't be big like us, then be geeks like us.